Don, are you able to see our people right now?
I see what looks like about 10 people in the hall. How many people are present?
More like 15, but you can see them.
I can see some of them. Hi,
Okay.
people. It's really helpful to know how many because I'm going to ask us to break into small groups later. So to say again that the theme tonight and the next 2 Wednesdays is on the three roots of well-being and non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. And there's a usefulness in looking at these in that it's a little bit more aspirational. In the early tradition of Buddhism that insight meditation evolved from, greed, hatred, and delusion are considered the roots of all suffering. And that's useful to know too, right? And they're the roots of suffering internally and externally. They can be powerful drivers, unseen filters on our behavior, on our minds, on our very way of relating to life. And so too can be their opposites, the absence of greed, the absence of hatred, and the absence of delusion. And what makes the non-greed, hate, and delusion roots of well-being? Well, in of themselves, perhaps you tasted a moment of one of them in the meditation, or you've tasted a moment of one of them in your life. They kind of provide, they generate a kind of well-being all on their own. And they're supportive conditions for each other. If I don't have a lot of greed for something, I'm not going to have a lot of aversion when I don't get it, for example. Or I'm less inclined to manufacture delusion about possibly getting it or not getting something. They also are conditions, underlying bases for other forms of flourishing, happiness, joy, peacefulness, awakening itself, nibbana, nirvana. And non-greed, non-hate, non-delusion can motivate actions, our very reason for being, in really beautiful ways. I've met people for whom, for example, greed is not a primary operating concern. I'm sure you have as well, at least in certain circumstances. And what remains? What remains is something very beautiful, right? Generosity, altruism, wisdom, equanimity. So a complete absence of greed, hatred, and delusion is a very big thing. It's actually one of the definitions of nirvana, nibbana itself. It's the end goal of the path, full awakening. But meanwhile, us mere mortals walking the path can learn a lot, nourish our hearts, our lives, our practice, through noticing and cultivating whole areas or even little moments of non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion, the roots of our own well-being and the well-being of those around us. So that's the overall framing of where we're going. And tonight, I'll do a little rap about non-greed in particular. It's got a whole wide range of flavors of experience, as I mentioned at the very beginning. And three of the classic ones in the ancient teachings are contentment, renunciation, or letting go. Those are both words for the Pali nekama, and generosity. The Buddha talks a lot about each of these. I'll talk about them for a little while and then offer some prompts for group discussion. Have you break into small groups, those of you who are willing, it is optional. And then we'll come back as a big group together and talk a little bit. So first, contentment, santuti in Pali. The Buddha teaches this is one of the greatest sources of inner wealth. One of the greatest sources of inner wealth. if you think about it. The hedonic treadmill we're on in our society, get, more and more and more, doesn't often result in contentment. Yeah, true contentment is a really nice feeling. It's a source of inner self-reliance. So the Buddha talks about that as one of the gifts of being a practitioner on the path, one of the gifts of being a serious practitioner on the path, a mendicant or a monk or a serious lay practitioner as we are. And there's different levels. One is to be content with belongings. For a monk or a nun, it's their robe and their bowl, the food that's offered, the medicine to sustain them, and that's kind of it. For those of us in the world, it might be being content with appreciating what we have rather than focusing on what I want. And then the second level is contentment in the practice. Contentment in the practice itself. And Tanisara Bhikkhu talks about this story of a foolish cow. Picture that. Foolish cow. Cow is in a field grazing, nice green field, lush grass on a hillside. And this not very wise cow looks up and sees another hill across the way that also is lush and green and beautiful. And because it's not a very experienced cow, maybe not so wise, it decides to go over and check out that grass. Trot, 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 trot. Well, it goes down to the ravine and it gets lost in the ravine. And not only can it not get to the new field, but it can't find its way back to the old field. That is an absence of contentment. And how many times, I know in my life, I've definitely, in meditation, leaned forward, tried to get something more, and lost the contentment with being present, right? Whatever that being present is. So that's what this little simile or story is pointing to. There's a power in being content with this breath, this moment, this arising, an experience of being at ease with. And then that contentment itself allows a little spark to take hold and continuity of attention in the breath or the practice. And it kind of can lead to some feeling of the practice practicing itself, flow. The Buddha describes ultimate contentment as being cleansed of greed, hatred, and delusion. And in many ways, the means echo the ends here. It's really, there is a room for effort, of course, and for making decisions. And generally speaking, there's a lot of wisdom in listening to the contentment, the okayness, that itself, that letting go process, can lead to greater and greater and greater levels of contentment and awakening. This comes from a compilation. It's a poem translated by Andy Olinsky called No Greater Contentment. And the compilation it comes from is the Awakening Poems of the Ancient Monks, the Theragatha. When the thundering storm cloud roars out in the mist, and torrents of rain fill the paths of the birds, nestled in a mountain cave, the practitioner meditates. No greater contentment than this can be found. When along the rivers the tumbling flowers bloom in winding wreaths adorned with verdant color, seated on the bank, glad-minded, they meditate. No greater contentment than this can be found. When restraining oneself in one's discursive thoughts, dwelling in a hollow in the mountain's midst, devoid of fear, one meditates. No greater contentment than this can be found. And when one is happy, free of stain, waste, and grief, unobstructed, unencumbered, and unassailed, having ended all defilements, one meditates. No greater contentment than this can be found. So it's that feeling, regardless of the external conditions, the seasons, the weather, something inside. Responding to a note about a bad connection, just know that it's being recorded, so you can go back and listen for anything you missed. So that poem brings us to renunciation, or letting go, the second area of many areas of non-greed. Renunciation is not a popular topic in American culture or contemporary culture, but it was highly regarded by the Buddha and by other wise sages of his era. In some ways, the Buddhist path could be couched as a gradual process of letting go of coarser pleasures for more refined ones, continually letting go of the coarser for the more refined, letting go of lots of stimulus in order to have space and time to meditate is a very simple example. There's a simile in the suttas about people who find they're traveling and they find like a heap of burlap and carry it along back to their village thinking that'll be great. And then a few miles later, they find something more valuable just left at the side of the road, and they have to set down the burlap and pick up, I don't remember what it was, flax. And eventually, the story goes, one of the travelers keeps picking up the more refined thing and setting down the rougher thing, but the other refuses to set down the coarser for the more refined. And they're friends, and they get back to the same village, and eventually one of them has gold and the other one has burlap. You can imagine the responses of their relevant spouses involved here. So there's discernment in the letting go, a wise letting go. Tanisro Bhikkhu calls this trading candy for gold. The Buddha talks about the benefit of renunciation, letting go, being like seeing a great vista from a mountaintop, seeing the big picture. It can also mean a willingness to relinquish or let go even of important things we have or we do for the benefit of a greater good. And here I'm going to talk about, this is a story that aired in the New York Times. I don't remember how long ago. I actually remember reading the original, and I ran across a recap of it in the last couple of days. It's called something like Chain 125, and it was the chain 125 refers to a chain of organ donors, and the doctors involved, the networks, they name the different chains to keep track of who's donating what to whom, right? And this one, at the time this story was published, was the largest chain ever known. It was 30 people gave their kidneys to 30 recipients, but it doesn't work that you just like you give it to one person and they get it. It was a chain because of the compatibility. And what I find particularly beautiful about this story is it was started by a person who had no need. He had no wife or sister or child or friend who needed anything. He was just inspired to give one of his kidneys to a total stranger to save their life. And he set off a chain reaction like dominoes falling of 30 other people doing this that wrapped back around. And when it finally got to the last patient, The last patient looked at the doctor with tears in their eyes, saying, "I don't want to be the person who to break the chain." And the doctor assured them, "No, you won't be. A new chain will start." And it did. But that selfless giving over, giving away, was an act of renunciation and an act of generosity. The renunciation piece is one that I know from my own family. One of my uncles donated his kidney to one of my aunts, not his sister, his cousin, actually. And he knew that it was going to change his life to do this, that he would just be, a little bit less fit, a little bit less whatever. But it was so worth it to him to see her thrive. And it has been absolutely beautiful. It has been decades to see how the kindness of this man rippled through her life, the many people she helped. She was practically a saint in the way she showed up. And in the inspiration it gave to his children and now grandchildren. So there's a ripple of goodness that can happen from that kind of renunciation and the shades into the next quality, generosity. Because that's a massive act of generosity, right? Include, as well as letting go. So these extraordinary acts aren't necessarily what any of us will do in our daily lives, certainly not very often. But they also, kindnesses, generosities, letting goes can be very small. The Buddha taught, and this is a quote, "If beings knew as I know the results of giving and sharing, they would not eat without having given, nor would the stain of selfishness overcome their minds. Even if it were their last meal, their last bite, they would not eat without having shared if there were someone to receive their gift." That is the power. That is the power of generosity. So the Buddha's describing a high bar here, right? And he's describing a generosity that is not a giving to get. It's not mixed with greed or gaining mind or anything like that. There's also loads of simple examples of how giving can feel good, from paying it forward at the parking meter or the toll booth, to sharing a smile with a stranger, all the way to random acts of kindness. Here's another story for you, modern story. This comes from the Associated Press. It's old. It was talks about people around the Christmas holidays who were anonymous, and they came to be known as the Kmart layaway angels. And the way this worked was that it came to be a mysterious woman paid off a struggling father's Christmas gift at an Indianapolis Kmart. And then Kmart customers across the Midwest started receiving calls from the store informing them that someone had paid off their layaway balances, which meant they were able to take their gifts home before the holidays. A nurse described it as kind of a minor miracle that appeared in her store. Or I'm sorry, that was a Kmart employee described it that way. And then a nurse whose child's Christmas presents were anonymously paid for said that it inspired her to then pay it forward to someone else the next time she could. It gave her faith in people again. So it's stories like this, right, that show the interpersonal impact of a generosity, a non-greed. So those are three simple examples of non-greed. They're contentment, renunciation or letting go, and generosity. And all of them kind of exemplify a skillful lack of greed. Up, I left out a few big ones with which greed can't coexist. There's holes in what I've said. I left them there on purpose. So when you're in small groups, if you think of other traits, qualities that exemplify non-greed, to sort of keep them in mind. There are many, many other states of heart and mind that don't explicitly contain greed, and knowing them and whether or not greed is present with them, for example, giving to get, knowing them makes space to cultivate more well-being. This is an aspirational way of practicing, and it's also a discernment practice. It's noticing the beautiful qualities and acknowledging whatever might be coming along with them, or if they're actually really pure. Either is fine, we're human, right? But just knowing and nourishing, appreciating the good qualities helps them to grow. It counters our natural negativity, bias, or self-criticism to do that. So that's a little wrap about non-greed. And now I'm going to ask you to turn towards and talk with each other about this. So I think, I'm trying to think of the best way to do this. How many do we have online here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Is there anyone online who does not want to be part of a group? Okay, Robert, I'll put you in your own breakout room. And then we'll go into groups of 3 or 4. So, Maria, can I ask you to help get people into groups of 3 or 4 in the main room? And once we're all settled into groups, you and Zoom, you're going to stay in the main room, so main Zoom room for now. I'll give prompts.
Does that work? And then actually, I'll be in this group. So we'll do you three, and then we'll be three. We've got some threes and some fours. And then, John, do you
Okay.
want me to put it when we get back together? Should I put it so that we can see everybody on the screen? Right now, we're seeing mostly you.
Yeah, once you do, and also getting the handheld mic out at some point would be great. So, all right. So, those of you in the Zoomiverse, I will be putting you in your breakout groups, but I want you to hear the prompts first. So, how many groups do we have in the main room?
Four.
Four. Okay. And we have four prompts. So, I will read off the prompts. I will also put them in the chat for those of you on Zoom. And each group take one prompt. So the group closest to the kitchen, your group one. The group closest, yeah, one. And then the group closest to the clock in the back corner in the main room, raise your hands so I know you see me. Yes, your group two. I can't see the other two groups. So group three will be the group closest to the foyer, and group four will be the other group. Okay. All right. So, group one, your question is, what's helpful or might be helpful about noticing or cultivating non-greed? What's helpful or might be helpful about noticing, cultivating non-greed? Okay. Not if you got it. Or give me a head a thumbs up or something. All right, great. Group two, what help might help you notice non-greed in your mind and your actions? What might help you notice non-greed in your mind or actions? Got it? All right, cool. Group three, what might be pitfalls of noticing or cultivating non-greed, and how might you address them? What might be pitfalls of noticing, cultivating non-greed, and how might you address them? And group four, What are some other forms of non-greed, other than the ones that I talked about, the contentment, the letting go, and the generosity? What are some other forms? So, we'll give you 15 minutes. I'm going to ask everyone to do this spiral style, which means one person goes briefly, the next person goes briefly, perhaps building on the prior person, and then you continue through, you cycle through with brief answers that build on each other. So if you habitually are really good at talking, this is an invitation to step back. And if you're habitually very silent, this is an invitation to step forward. So I'll ask the person with the shortest hair to go first. If we've got two bald people, flip a coin. Okay. And let's see, we've got one, two, three, four, five. I'm going to put you all in the Zoom room into four groups as well. And I will ask you, with whatever your breakout room number is, to use that prompt, and I'll paste them in the chat so you don't have to remember everything I said, okay? All right, 15 minutes from now, I'll ring a bell, and please enjoy. Give me just a moment, Zoom folks. Okay, enjoy.
Far away from here for a long time.
Not in the moment, it's more important that you especially
Just make some connections. It's so easy to put out your hand around here.
Yeah.
Little tiny steps.
As far as like not focusing on the type of greed that has to do with like acquiring things or the generosity. in the world. But I guess having that aside, having to do with physical things, I do think of like for myself, anyways. But this might still fall under the her heading. But for me, it has to do with wanting approval and that is when it comes up for me quite a bit. And then when I get into that place, it kind of causes resentment and just causes negative feelings to come up. So I guess I'm just learning more to.
So maybe Maria, while you're getting the microphone for the in-person group, I would love to hear just a really brief report from group one in the Zoom room about maybe highlights of what you noticed, what's helpful or might be helpful about noticing or cultivating non-greed. So maybe one of the members of that group could report back if you're willing. You can chat it if you feel shy.
I won't remember everything, but it was just lovely. The ease that came in the mind when naming this, for me, it was like I had grasping in my mind, and even just naming it brought in the mindfulness of that to soften. And in the spaciousness of that opened up, it brought in qualities like gratitude and appreciation. And I think we were all, each in our own way, speaking of how like having this concept put in the map of the mind, right? It's not like, it's so easy to have greed, you know, greed is like dangled as the carrot, but the absence of that is actually kind of what you want, right? That's what you want when you get the carrot, to feel you can finally have the ease, but we got to go straight to the ease in the contemplation.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you, Tom, that's great. Can we hear from group one in the hall, in the physical hall? And just one or two ideas, because I didn't really give us enough time to do a proper group discussion.
Hi, can you hear me?
A little bit, yeah.
We spoke of the sense in relationship to abundance with non-greed, and how that abundance can operate in different areas of our life and affect our ability to be generous. We also spoke of noticing small acts of non-greed as a way to cultivate them in ourselves and others.
Nice.
And do my group members want to add anything? Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. That's great. So group two, maybe we'll start in the hall this time and then move back to Zoom. Maybe highlights of what you heard and discussed.
Yeah.
It's over here.
Everybody moved around.
We're too scattered. I was left with our discussion with this idea of separation and connection. And also we discussed noticing a little bit and
ways we notice, some specifics about what helped us notice actions or thoughts that were either agreed or not agreed, kind of self-check things. How does it feel in our body?
Right. How does it feel in our bodies?
Great. Wonderful. Thank you. How about group two and Zoom? What did you notice? Robert.
We noticed that what might help you notice non-greed? Well, not thinking of yourself, thinking of others first. We thought that it was kind of funny because you notice greed quite a bit, but when you're having non-greed, you don't seem to notice it so much. And it's kind of a relief in that way. And we thought that noticing it would, when a way to notice it is that you're happy, that you're content, that you're serene, that you're not being consumed by the greed that affects both your mind and body.
Wonderful.
That was our synopsis.
Fantastic. Love it. So group three on Zoom, we're just going to kind of keep weaving like this. You got the pitfalls question. Does anyone want to say anything about what you noticed in your conversation?
Okay, I'll try to sum it up. But I think we all really enjoy going around in the circle, in the spiral, and we kind of build on each other. And so I don't know if we came to any certain conclusion, but it seems like we covered a lot of things.
Great.
I started feeling a little bit confused about the topic of pitfalls. Possibly, we weren't sure exactly if it was pitfalls to having these things or to not having these things. So we started on pitfalls of not having greed. And then we moved to pitfalls of having greed. So we kind of, but we did cover a lot of topics. Yes. I don't know if you want to add anything.
Well, criticalness, judgment, being triggered. Yes, we covered when we get self-critical or critical of others or judgment or being tricked stories of the past or being stuck in the past and not being really present. Was an obstacle.
Yeah, definitely.
And fear.
And fear, yes.
Fear.
Fear is a big one, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Big obstacle to non-greed. Thank you. Thank you. And what about group three on the Zoom screen? Does somebody want to represent for that? I think it was maybe a dyad.
I'll just say one thing. Jan can add if she wants to. We talked about many things as well, but one thing that stuck out for me was if we use generosity as an example to say if we are noticing it in ourselves and then comparing ourselves to others, you know, that can be a pitfall, like somehow feeling like I'm not as generous as someone else, or you know, kind of looking to have some sort of validation for that generosity from outside or in comparison to somebody else is sort of the wrong motivation for generosity. So, yeah.
Great. Thank you, Meg. Yeah, it's a really good observation, right? That it can become a more generous than thou competition kind of thing. Jan, did you have anything you wanted to add to the discussion?
I think Meg did a good summary of it. Yeah, thank you.
Great, thank you. And how about in the Zoom boxes, how about group four? Any ideas on other forms of non-greed that I didn't sort of bring into the room?
Well, one of the things we talked about, several different things, talked about helping people. We talked about gratitude. And then I talked about actually, it's sort of non-intuitive, self-care, and that caring for yourself and being centered and calm and watching that and taking care of yourself can really help other people, because you're not giving out, like, I hate to say it, bad vibes, but you're giving more of a calm, centered feeling as well. And that kind of then leads to the gratitude thing, that, you know, you get to the point where you're grateful for just the small things that you have.
Wonderful. Thank you, Susan. Great. And what about group four in the physical hall? Anything to report back from your discussion?
This is Steph, and I think I'm outside your lens there, but
you are.
Before. You know, what's so interesting, you know, I had different questions, but a lot of the same things were shared. And I think we shared a lot of the same things that we've been hearing, and the importance of interpersonal communications and how we interact with each other. There's so much harm happens just in interactions and with judgments and our old baggage always is sort of there, and that goes back to our speech, right? But we also talked about what else? What was out there? What's so important are the little tiny things we do over and over again, more than those big giant heroic kinds of things. You know, just being open, just being generous, just making connections with people, being accepting of people, all of those things make such a huge difference in creating an atmosphere in a world where there's less harm. And so I think those are sort of some of the keys for us.
Wonderful, wonderful. I really love hearing all the different insights and observations and wisdom and explorations in the rooms. It's really lovely. And I guess maybe I'll just say a couple of words, and then we'll do a quick pulse in the room, maybe of a one word of how this was for you. So as you're discovering, this is a rich territory, right? There's a lot there, and there's similar themes that come up no matter what way, what angle we approach. And to encourage you that in many ways, the practice of Vipassana is a practice of discernment. And there's real power in noticing what's going right and what you aspire to, and that will not only help cultivate it in the mindfulness, it also highlights so many of the obstacles or pitfalls you all were talking about, right? Like, if I'm aspiring to be generous and I've got judgment coming in, the judgment way more obvious in that moment, right? So to consider over the next week for yourself, picking one of these qualities of non-greed that spoke to you, and just noticing when it's a through line and when it isn't, what blocks it and what helps develop it. That might be a beautiful thing to do. And you can, if you want to be brave, you can pick any non-greed. But as someone said, it can be hard to notice because greed is so powerful and seductive that unless we start to train our minds to the serenity, the contentment, the ease, the self enoughness, it can be hard to notice it. So just see, notice for yourselves. So we just have a couple of minutes left, and if anyone just wants to say one word about what this was like for them, I'll start with the Zoom tiles and see if anyone just wants to pop something in the chat or say a quick word.
I found it really lovely having it put on the map. The letting go that it fosters is really nice.
Lovely. Thank you. Anybody else in Zoom room? Yes, Nicole.
I found it fun to interact with somebody new and to meet somebody new and discuss such a good topic.
Great. Any other words you want to share? Okay. I'm moving into the real, the four walls room. If anyone wants to share, obviously this is optional.
I'm going
to
pass them. Yeah.
Completely optional. Just wave your hand at whoever's holding the mic.
I'll say it was helpful.
Helpful. Great.
Connecting.
Wonderful. Connecting got a snap. Great.
Enjoyable.
Wonderful. So we need to wrap up. That flew by for me. I don't know what it was like for you, but that was a quick hour and a half. And I just want to add my appreciation for each of you for your practice and for this dialogue. It was really rich to hear the bits of it I did, and encourage you over the next week to please notice any form of non-greed that feels right and any piece of any of the prompts that helps you discern when it arises and when it's not there. So may our practice together be of benefit to ourselves, to our hearts and our lives and all of the lives that we touch. All of the lives they touch, rippling outward and outward. May all beings be free of greed, hatred, and delusion. May all beings be safe, fulfilled, and awakened. Thank you, everyone. Look forward to seeing some or most of you in some form next week. I plan to be there in person.
Thank you so much, Dawn.
Thank you. And thank you, especially Maria and Manny.
I hope you continue to feel better. Thank you. Thank you. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.